When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey there. Before you start listening, please make sure to subscribe to this podcast. This episode contains language and content of an explicit nature. Listener discretion is advised. Before a song is released, a record is produced, or a chorus is written, the musicians that write them think a lot. They live a lot, and they feel a lot. Before the Chorus dives into the stories and experiences that shape these artists and, ultimately, the music we hear. I'm your host, Sophia Lopercaro, and this episode's guest is Vacations.
It was really confronting, knowing all my patterns of behavior, the way I spoke, the way I acted, anything I did, I could all trace that back to having OCD, and it's bizarre. Knowing that you've had this condition your whole life, but you've only just now starting to come to terms with it.
Hello there. Welcome to the first episode of 2024. It feels really, really good to be back. It's obviously been wonderful to have some time to rest and recharge and be with family, but I won't lie, I get pretty antsy as well if I'm not doing anything for a few weeks, so I'm really excited to be here and getting to talk to you again and getting to do interviews again and all the good things. Well, technically the interview you're about to hear was recorded before I went on vacation for Christmas and all that, but I am just generally back to working, editing, booking more interviews, and just gearing up for all the hopefully good things that are going to come out of this year. I really hope so. I hope that you have had a wonderful, restful holiday break as well, and that as we have all started to transition back into day-to-day life, that it's going smoothly for you. And hopefully also you've started to get back into whatever music things you may be personally excited about. I've not quite gotten there yet. I'm still actually in Florida at the time of this recording. Actually, when this episode is released, I will have just basically arrived back in LA and kind of started my day-to-day life. Again, I've started working on episodes and stuff. I'm just working remotely. I guess all it means is that I wish I could say I have a whole lot more music stuff to report than I do, just because I'm in a kind of quieter part of Florida where there's not many gigs going on. That being said, a few things that I did get to do, last weekend actually, I went and visited my younger brother in Tampa area. And we got to go to see some live jazz, which was really great. More like big band kind of stuff, smooth jazz, which I do have an appreciation for. I'm more into my like weird experimental jazz personally, but it was just nice to be around something fun and creative again. I've realized, as you know, as we all get to know ourselves, or as I get to know myself as an adult, I feel most myself when I am engaging with something creative. And so that felt really good. We also went to this awesome awesome record shop in an area called Clearwater. They had just a massive, massive, massive selection of records from all genres. A lot of classic rock for sure, but also plenty of international stuff, soundtracks, a lot of like older records from like the 1950s, maybe even the 1940s. Just a good spot to go and rummage. And I think I spent like maybe around 40, 45 bucks, and I got like, I feel like I got at least 5 records. Hold on, I've got them behind me. We're gonna do this. We're gonna back up because I don't have a mic stand, so I can be a little portable for a minute. I got 1, 2, 3, 4. Did I only get 4? No, I got 5. I got 5 records. This year, as a Christmas gift, I also got the best of Ella Fitzgerald on vinyl. I've not spent a lot of time on Ella Fitzgerald yet, so I'm very excited when I get home to pop that into my record player and listen to more of her. And also, another thing, my younger brother Marco is a really talented musician in his own right. He produces a lot of his own beats and has such an incredible knowledge of jazz and gospel and a lot of records that are usually great for sampling. And so it was really fun to get to hang out with him and kind of be reminded of how his brain works. And we got to jam together, do a little cover of Arrow Through Me by Paul McCartney and Wings. And I played the piano again, which I haven't done very much in, I want to say at least like a year and a half, 2 years, my God. But all that to say, it just felt good to get back into playing. As I've mentioned before with some of my OCD stuff, I am a raging perfectionist when it comes to how I consume music, as well as how I make music and how I perform music. And I'm finally in a period of my life where I think I'm starting to be able to return it, because there were points where it was getting so bad that I just like avoid certain instruments or avoid making music because I was just like, I can't do this. I'm not good enough at it. And I'm finally getting at least a little closer to being okay with being imperfect and just trying things again. And so I felt a little bit more like myself getting to play. Ooh, I should also add, I forget if I mentioned this in any of the recap episodes, but when I was in Dallas a couple weeks ago, I ended up bringing some of my own original songs to a friend's house, and he helped me add some guitar parts, because I'm not a very strong guitar player, he is, and it just felt so validating and so exciting to hear my ideas have the potential to become fully formed, because I've never really experienced that. I don't know how to do everything by myself, and I'm terrible at asking for help. Again, something I'm trying to get better at in 2024. And this is all to say, you know, I'm not necessarily trying to like pivot careers or anything, but just give myself permission to create things and to ask for help and work with other people and embrace imperfection in the creative things that I love to do. So that felt really, really good. And if that's something you're struggling with in your own creative pursuits, whether that be in music or something entirely different, I think I've learned that trusting yourself doesn't mean that you expect yourself to be perfect or make the right decisions at all times. It just means that you're trusting yourself to move as much as you can in the right direction. And also, mistakes are what make us human. So I don't know, give it a shot. If that's something you've been curious about trying this year, go for it. And you can go at your own pace. You don't have to go crazy. Just, yeah, let yourself be curious and try things because you want to, not because they need to look or sound a certain way. Speaking, I guess, of OCD, I think this is a good time to bring up this first guest of the year, Vacations. The reason I say OCD is relevant here is because Campbell, the frontman of Vacations, wrote quite a lot about OCD on this record. He was diagnosed, I forget if it was a couple years ago or more recently, but it ended up really informing a lot of this record. And getting to talk to, I mean, I love getting to talk about deep stuff in general, mental health especially, and even more so talking about OCD on this podcast, because I think, as any of us can understand, when there's a particular thing that very directly affects us, it can be really helpful to get to talk to someone else who gets it for on a very intimate level. They really understand how OCD works. It's also really cathartic to get to see something like it be translated into art that, you know, I can understand and I can relate to and other people with OCD can relate to. I think there's also a lot on this record that people without OCD can relate to, whether that be songs that were actually directly written about OCD or ones that weren't. I think there's elements of it that are universal. But again, that really was special to me. And also a big part of why I like doing this podcast and why I also just generally like sharing about my experience is because I know how much it's meant to me when someone else has spoken openly about their experience with OCD and how seen and validated it made me feel and how much easier it made it for me to cope with and overcome certain aspects of my OCD. And there's something deeply, deeply fulfilling to me about getting to do that for other people and making other people feel less alone, making it a little easier for them to heal. That, I don't know, it just hits my heart in a special place. So as soon as the folks at Vacations Label reached out about this one, I was immediately like, absolutely, I would love to do this. And it ended up, again, being a wonderful conversation. Campbell was such a joy to talk to and released this deeply relatable and wonderful record. It also just has like a almost dream pop tinge to it while singing about some things that can otherwise be really heavy. So it's like sonically, it's giving you room to breathe while you digest all of these different, maybe heavier things that one might have to grapple with. It's wonderful. And again, I can't wait for you to hear this conversation. I'm so glad to be back with the first one of the year. So without further ado, this is my conversation with Campbell from Vacations. I think the best place to begin, quite literally, is at the beginning, because Next Exit, the opening track, really sets the tone for the record and just the sort of desire for, or just a need to break out of a lot of different types of cycles.
Making a record is such a bizarre process. I don't think I'll ever fully understand it. And I think that's why I keep doing it. Maybe in order to understand that process or more about myself. It's almost like self-reflective or therapeutic. But with Next Exit, that was the first track that I wrote for the album. I didn't know what the rest of the album really looked like. I had a vague idea and maybe other themes that I wanted to touch on, but it's interesting having that as the first track that was written, but also the first track to the album that, like you said, does set the tone and kind of almost the story moving forward throughout the album. And I guess, yeah, being stuck in those repetitive cycles and just like going through the motions and realizing that you do need a change. And I find it really interesting too, because most of the time when I write a song, I don't really, or it's very rare that I understand what it's actually about when I first write it. Because people are always like, oh, what's the track about? And genuinely, I have no idea. Like, it's almost like you don't really realize what it's about till like maybe a year, 2 years, three, like much further down the path, once you're able to reflect and process all that emotion and all that feeling that you initially put into the track. Like,
yeah,
it's such a weird thing.
I've heard it go both ways, and it's always so fascinating to hear different people talk about that. Like, I did one interview with someone where they're like, I was just going like full on stream of consciousness, and now actually doing an interview helps me to kind of look back in retrospect. And then I have other people that are like laser point, like, this is exactly what I want to talk about and explore. And then sometimes it's also both. Sometimes things just kind of come out. And then like it can really be both. Sometimes they coexist in the same record or same project.
I think so. And I think as well, when you first write a song, initially it is just for yourself because no one else has really heard it yet. And it feels very personal. But as more and more people start to hear it, whether that's another producer or a bandmate or a partner, friends, family, the meaning can start to change and warp. And then once it's finally released with like the artwork and the music video and everything, the meaning then starts to change again, at least for myself. And I find that there's always going to be like my own interpretation. There'll be someone else's interpretation, whether that's like, again, friends, family, or like a fan. I've had fans come up to me after shows and say, oh, is this song about this particular thing that happened in your life? And it's not, but I love that people can have their own interpretation. Like,
yeah.
Rather than like a stock, like, this is what the track is like.
Absolutely. I've said this many times on the podcast, but I love the idea of all of these interpretations coexisting together. A lot of the times the way that I structure my questions is based on my interpretation, but then I'll always say like, but please correct me if I'm wrong. And it's not about saying that I am, you know, silly for reading it the way that I did. It's just kind of I want to hear what the original story is, but also it, they can, those two, again, those two things can coexist.
Mm, that's true. And slightly contradicting myself here, but I know that in the past, I always tried to write very, like, very vaguely, like, non-gendered and very, like, it could have multiple interpretations. But then with this album, I thought, well, I've already done that so many times before. Maybe I do want to get a little more literal and blunt and to the point, and using very, like, specific parts of, like, things that have happened throughout my life down to, like, maybe, like, the location or the day or the weather or things like that, to really kind of say this is my own unique experience, but then trying to find a way that people can still relate to that experience. Because I think before I was maybe trying to write so universally, so in hopes that everyone could relate to it. And now it's almost this like shift where I kind of want to get even more and more personal and like hone in a bit, but then still find that sort of pop sensibility or like way for people to relate to the track.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, I mean, I think in a way, ironically, sometimes being more personal does actually make you more relatable, even if you think that it's becoming more niche, because it's getting more deeply into what makes you human rather than kind of the more blanket statement.
Because I didn't used to think that. I used to think that if you were getting very, very niche and specific, it almost build this wall between yourself and the listener in a way that maybe you can't directly relate to the experience, but I think over time, through my own songwriting experience of, again, I've shifted and I've realized, like, no, you can have both.
Yeah. I also find sometimes, like, one of my favorite songs of all time is I'll Still Destroy You by The National. Oh, and cool. And that is a song that, I mean, some of it deals with substance abuse.
Mm.
But there's also a large element of the song that's about fatherhood. Okay. I am a cisgender heterosexual female who does not have children, so like in a literal sense I'm never going to relate to that experience, but he describes it in such specific details that I almost feel like I'm understanding someone else's lived experience, and I find that as powerful as when it's something that I've lived through myself. I feel like I've been invited in to someone else's brain, and I don't know, I think that in its own way it also can give you a sense of empathy for the way that another human being works. So again, I don't find it alienating. I actually find it very inviting.
Yeah. That's that's good to hear that take, because it's, like I keep saying, again, coming around to that idea that it can be inviting, and seeing such a, or hearing, I should say, such a display of like raw human emotion is what connects everybody at the end of the day. And I think that's the most important thing. I also used to be in the mindset, I feel like if the band listens to this, they'll get a good laugh out of it, because we've talked about it before, but I think we used to be in the mindset that's like, oh, like the chorus really slaps, or like this is a banger, or like the snare tone is so good. And it's like, none of that, like that is important. Those are elements that make a song. But at the end of the day, I don't think like the fidelity or like the tone or any of those things necessarily matters. It's just whether or not the emotion is there, and if you connect to that emotion.
Yes.
That's the most powerful thing about songwriting, and that is something I always try to harp on about when I'm with my band, or if we're in a songwriting session, or if I'm in a songwriting session with other artists or producing. It's just, what's the point? Like, why are we here? Why are we doing this? It gets existential very quickly, but it should, because we're looking at ourselves and getting into these very deep emotions, and there's nothing worse than just releasing a track or writing a song and you just don't really feel anything at all for it. It's just kind of there, like
you don't want it to just be a thing. I have a question about that that I'm going to bring up in just a second, but
okay.
I'll share something. My vocal teacher told me this recently that really helped me let go of some of my own perfectionism, which was she's like, I'd rather watch a performance where it's maybe a little pitchy sometimes, but there's so much like raw humanity and emotion in it versus something that's so technically perfect and micromanaged
it loses its entire soul. It's so boring. It feels, that to me feels alienating because it's too perfect.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, it's like synthetic or like, or digital in a sense. It's not real. Like,
So the question I want to ask now is, I know that you've mentioned in the past having sort of a period where you kind of had to find your love of music again. Mm-hmm. And like everything that you've just said now about like perfectionism and kind of getting stuck in the details, does it have anything to do with that?
Does it have anything to do with?
Like being in those kind of, like you said, like everything has to be kind of perfect and in its place. Like, was that something that maybe created a bit of a loss of like passion and that you had to recover from, or is it something totally unrelated?
I think so. I think it's really interesting because I got diagnosed with pure OCD, I think 2 years ago now, which seems like a lifetime ago, but it's interesting post-diagnosis being able to reflect on my younger self, particularly when I was making our first album, Changes, and even just the way that, like, how I would be setting up mics and, like, trying to get everything, like, perfectly centered and perfectly aligned. And at the time, I thought I was just being very detail-orientated. I wasn't, like, the thought of having a condition like that would have never have crossed my mind. I don't even think I really knew too much about it other than, like, what it is stereotyped to be. But I think the falling out of love with music, more so my own than music as a whole, because whilst that was happening, I was still listening to like a lot of music, but I found that it was during our second album, Forever in Bloom. We released it during the pandemic. We couldn't tour at the same time. We had a lot of virality through TikTok. There were multiple record labels. There was lots of conversations between our manager and their team and this team, and, you know, people contacting me every day saying, well, this song just blew up, or, you know, this TikTok just went viral. Like, you know, you have to make a TikTok, you have to do this. And then also trying to just go about my life in a day-to-day way of just living, like not trying to pay attention to, you know, the pandemic or all the riots that was happening or all the, you know, distress in the world. It was very, it's a very disorientating feeling. And it's like the last thing I really wanted to do in that moment was write music for vacations. It just felt like something I didn't quite recognize. It felt very alienating. And every time I sat down to try and write, it did have this sort of weight of expectations of, well, it has to be perfect, or it has to be a certain sound, or it's what, you know, fans expect, or my own expectations for what the music should be. And I wasn't quite hitting these marks. And I was like, this just feels wrong. I just sort of stopped trying in that domain. So I shifted gears and instead worked with my friends and other artists. And I found that when writing a song with someone else, when I was detached from the process, it was actually very straightforward and very simple. Writing a song could take as little as 30 minutes, like intro, verse, chorus, like everything could be so, so simple. And I think I had to sort of like take a break from myself and my own process and spend time with others and see how their artistic practice was practiced. I don't know, I'm trying to find words here. But just see how other people worked in order to sort of come back to myself and go, okay, well, what have I learned from others, these connections and friendships and this sense of community? What can I take from that and apply it to myself in order to grow as a person and break down that wall or that barrier to fall back in love with music? And I really do owe it to all the people that I've met, like, since, like, during that time, like, all the sessions that I did, everywhere that I traveled, just all the sessions that will happen, because there's just so many people out there that's like, yeah, let's write, and we're still, you know, trying to tee those things up. It's just like seeing that, and I guess being really engaged with that, because there was a time where I was like almost trying to be like a Kevin Parker or something, where I'm like, oh, I have to do everything. Everything has to be me. I have to write the song, mix the song, master the song. I have to play all the instruments. If I don't do it, something bad will happen. Something like my art won't be recognized. I won't be this like poetic mastermind or whatever. And as soon as I was able to let go of that and just surround myself with other people, it just made everything just felt lighter, I guess, when I came back to sit down and write for myself. And it wasn't even, when I did come back and start writing again, I wasn't even being conscious of the fact that I was writing for vacations. I was just writing because I wanted to write, which was something I hadn't done in years, and then everything just sort of started coming naturally, like it used to. So
yeah. Yeah, you just hit a big bingo point for me both, and it's something I can very directly relate to, which is that, you know, like I used to, I mean, I still occasionally write very much for myself, but the reason I've never gotten into releasing music is because I held a similar expectation myself where I was like, I have to do everything. I have to produce this. I have to know how to arrange it.
Yeah.
Well, also not, I don't have the technical skills for it. Like I have ear for like what makes you know, an arrangement good, what needs to be there, but I don't have the technical skills, and I'm such a perfectionist because of my OCD that I'm like, and I just look at it, I'm like, I'm never going to be able to get there. There's a million things I have to do. I'm going to keep making mistakes because I get in my head and I'm going to beat myself up. And so it ended up becoming such a source of stress that I just was like, I'm not going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying hits really close to home. And also, I mean, in my case, adding gender, like being a woman, like the idea of just singing or just writing the lyrics, you're kind of looked at as like, okay, well now you have to bring in a man to be your producer and to be the real mastermind behind everything. So
yeah, of course, which is such a, it makes this industry a minefield, and I'm glad that there is some change starting to take place, because we are starting to see more non-male producers and songwriters come forward and put out lots of great material. And it doesn't have to be like, oh, well, I need to go hit up this producer that's like been in the industry for like forever and a day. And you don't have to do that anymore.
No.
There's
a second thing I want to bring up in what you said that I'm curious to hear your take on, but I find, for example, I'm really good at giving other people rational advice.
Oh my God. Yes.
Because it's not my, it's not in my own world. It's not my own triggers, my own expectations of myself. So when you said that your sort of respite and your way of getting kind of out of it for a bit was writing for other people. And I'm curious to hear your take on this, but there's this sort of removal from your own, again, expectations, because you would never put those on another person.
Yeah. And it's like this reflection where you're like, wow, I am so hard on myself. And why? Why am I doing this? Like, why am I treating myself this way? Because I would never do any of these things to anyone else.
Yeah.
And it's, I notice that when I'm writing with other people, I become this like almost life coach character where I like, I get so passionate and I care so much, and I want them to see the best in themselves, because it's so important to me, because nothing kills me more than seeing a friend or just anybody say, oh, I don't really like this. I don't really like what I'm doing. I don't really think my art's going to go anywhere. Maybe I should quit and do a 9-to-5. I hate that.
Yeah.
And I just want to like shake them and be like, no, you are worthy. You can do this. Like,
yeah, I think that having OCD gives you this insane sense of empathy. I mean, not for everyone, because, you know, there's good and bad people out there, but
oh, absolutely.
I think when you understand how small you can make yourself feel, you don't want others to live through that. And so there's
absolutely,
again, I think it really breeds a sense of compassion, which actually I put something towards the end of my notes, but I kind of want to bring it up now, because this idea of worthiness comes up on the record in a few songs. One of them is Slow Motion and the other one is Lost in Translation.
Interesting.
In Slow Motion, maybe in different ways, but the way I kind of read it is like Slow Motion, like wanting to know if someone will be there for you and like is willing to be in your life, whether that be romantically or platonically or professionally or whatever. And it's kind of like basically like asking, like, am I deserving? Am I capable of receiving love and being treated as worthy? And then the end of Lost in Translation is quite literally saying, you're worthy of love. We are worthy of love.
I felt like I had such a big brain moment. When like, because this is a fun fact, but the album is also a perfect loop, because by the time you get to Lost in Translation and the track starts to fade out, it will go back into Next Exit with all the chatter and the field recordings and everything. And for me, that's almost the perfect summary of OCD, where you get to the end and you're like, oh, this is fine. I'm okay. Everything's okay. None of these thoughts are real material things that will hurt me. But then you get back to Next Exit and you're like, wait, I'm back at the start again. I'm in this constant feedback loop of just rumination and thoughts and...
Yeah, there's a line on Terms and Conditions that I think is my favorite line on the entire record that I think hits on that, which is, I can't win, but I can lose or learn how to live with you.
Yeah, yes, thank you. That's one of my favorite. Yeah, because it did... There was a point in my life where I was like, this just feels so overwhelming. Like, I don't know if I'm going to get through this. Like, it just feels so insurmountable trying to come to terms with this condition, to be quite, you know, like the song. But learning that I had OCD, it was just a very... At first, I was relieved. I even remember coming home and I was like, Mom, Dad, I have OCD. Like, we figured it out after 3 years of therapy. Like, we finally did it. And they just looked at me and they were like, no, you don't. Like, you don't have that. Like, which I get, they were being protective, but...
Of course.
Once I, like, initially got over that excitement and that, then the realization kicked in, and then being able to look back throughout my life, and it was really confronting. Knowing all my patterns of behavior, the way I spoke, the way I acted, the way I... Anything I did, I could all trace that back to having OCD. And it's bizarre knowing that you've had this condition your whole life, but you've only just now starting to come to terms with it. It's interesting too, looking back on my past songwriting, there's so many songs now where I'm like, oh, I'm actually talking about having OCD. I just had no idea I had it. Yeah. Like,
there's another line on Terms and Conditions. I was playing charades while the house was on fire.
Yeah.
That feels very much that. Like, because you're, again, you're dealing with something that doesn't have a name. I also, something I've learned recently through my own, I mean, as we talked about on that other line I mentioned, like, OCD is a lifelong chronic thing, whether we like it or not. And it's
not something that just goes away.
No, it's like, not something you defeat. It's something you learn how to cope with and manage. But something else I've learned in my own journey, at least in recent parts of it, is that often the advice that we'd give to neurotypical people for certain situations is actually counterintuitive to the advice that someone with OCD needs, especially because we have, like, as the record literally mentions, a fear of the unknown, a fear of uncertainty. And lack of control. And so it can be really hard to deal with something like OCD if you haven't named it, because it works in such its own specific way.
That brings me back to slow motion, because I think in the chorus, when I'm saying, if I lean into you, will you take a hold of me, is talking about that uncertainty, because my therapist was like, we worked really hard at it, but just that idea of leaning into the unknown or uncertainty as much as possible and almost treating it as a positive rather than a negative.
Yeah.
Which is something and it's funny, like, you talking about trying to convey that to neurotypicals as well. That feels so funny to say as well, those neurotypicals.
I've only in the last few months started to accept the word neurodivergent as something to define myself, especially because like OCD, some people are like, yes, it is. Some people are like, no, that's only reserved for certain types of, you know, neurodivergence. But
That's interesting.
But I've personally started to own it, because, like, my brain is wired differently than other people, and I don't want to resist, like, be ashamed of that, essentially.
I feel maybe adverse to it only because I feel like I'm fine with being called neurodivergent, and I would call myself neurodivergent.
Yeah, and by the way, it's fine that you get to define yourself within that, like, whatever way feels good to you. Yeah, no, it's totally not like you have to define yourself the same way someone else does.
I do find it really interesting because it brings up that whole idea of pop psychology, and maybe more millennials, Gen Z in particular. And I feel like in the past few years, the word neurodivergent is starting to become more and more diluted in the same way that gaslighting or toxic or anything in that realm. And I feel like it's maybe starting to lose meaning, because I feel like more and more I'm hearing people say that they are neurodivergent, which is fine, they might be, but I think it's important to try to go to therapy or take those steps or try to learn more about yourself rather than using it as a blanket statement because it's important not to enforce and push forward stereotypes, I guess, yeah. in the same way that, like, a lot of people, and it was funny when I got diagnosed as well, because it was close to Christmas, and I remember, what was it? There was a store back home, and they were selling mugs that said obsessive Christmas disorder.
Oh God.
And
I've seen more than enough of that stuff.
Yeah. And it really got to me, and I just think it's important that it doesn't become a word that is watered down, that is diluted in the same way that other really important psychological terms have been, because there's nothing killed me more again than, like, pop psychology or people on Instagram sharing infographics, or sometimes that can be helpful, sometimes there is some good information within that, but mm-hmm. I attribute so much to seeking out professional help and doing that work. I feel like I've gone to the gym and I've just gotten so shredded and I can lift anything, and it's really important. If I didn't take those steps, then I might have some awareness, but not anywhere near to the same level. So I guess I feel like there is no right or wrong.
No.
There is no black and white, just like with having OCD. It's all a very gray area. It's all very uncertain, but I get very worked up and passionate about it. Like,
which is totally valid. I mean, in my case, like, I take it from, like, what science is saying. Like, it's contested, I think, within the scientific community, not necessarily just on, like, Instagram. And also doesn't give you a free pass or, like, mean that you should be listening to, like, TikTokers telling you, like, how to manage your OCD. Because I've seen some say some stuff that is, it's like the thing I just said, for example, about how treatment for OCD and the advice you give someone with OCD can be counterintuitive to what someone without it would have.
Totally.
Big reason I mentioned that is because of people. Like, there was a video that one of my friends, who I think also has OCD, did, like a stitch of, and it was a girl saying, like, intrusive thoughts are just the things that you actually want. And then my friend, like, jumped in. She's like, no, it's not. Please stop right now. No. So
the worst thing I can imagine is just people sharing that. Like, I'll always see, like, a reel being like, oh, I'm so OCD, and it's them rearranging something in their kitchen so that everything's straight. And then all the comments are like, oh, wow, I must have OCD too. And it's like, that's not what it is. Do not label yourself as that. Do not start going out and start saying, oh, well, I'm neurodivergent and this, mm-hmm. this. It's just, it gets so much deeper than that. Like,
yeah.
And then when people do start saying, like, if I was to go to someone and say, oh, well, I do have OCD, I am neurodivergent, it just loses meaning over time if people start using that type of language in that particular way, where it just, again, becomes diluted.
Like, yeah, absolutely. I think it's one of those that it comes down to how you use it. Like, again, for me, it's also the reason I just find this an interesting topic to talk about within all this. The reason, like, I started claiming the word neurodivergent is, again, because there is, like, validity to it. And I do have a clinical diagnosis of OCD. Yes. But it, for me, was also a way to teach myself to have grace towards myself when I'm not coping with things the same way that other people are, for example. Mm-hmm. Like, growing up, like, I remember I used to, when I do my exams in secondary school, because of my OCD, I got, like, an extra hour. Like, I was in the kind of group of kids, like, that, you know, if they had that, or, like, ADHD or dyslexia, there was kind of a group. But I always took pride in finishing in the regular time. And it was as if I was proving to myself, see, I'm just as normal as everybody else.
Yeah.
Despite this thing. Exactly. So for me, claiming that word is not about, again, using it in a fast and loose way. It's kind of allowing myself to be, like, especially because I've dealt with, like, burnout in my work because of the expectations that I've set on myself that are impossible.
Yeah.
And so this for me was a way of saying, it is okay that my brain does not work the same way, that I do not work at the same pace, or I do not work in the same order as other people.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of gave me an ability to remove a lot of resentment towards myself in the way that I operate. And so that I can actually use the parts of the way that my brain works that I like to my favor, rather than being angry at myself for them.
Which I think is a really beautiful realization, because, again, OCD or anything adjacent to it, thinking of that line from Terms and Conditions, mm-hmm. Like, you can lose and you can get to a point where you just never figure it out and it leads to a life of unfulfillment. Or you can learn to live with it. And in a sense, I almost treat it not as like a superpower, a friend, but I know that it can be a positive quality to myself because it does create this sense of empathy that I can have for people. And maybe the way that I approach certain situations or problem solve, and in a way, at least after all the work and medication and everything, I am grateful for it because it makes me who I am. And that's important. I guess it's like showing yourself an act of kindness or self-love.
Absolutely. With all that, I want to talk about the song Over You, because I mean, speaking of things that a therapist will tell you to do if you have OCD, it's giving your OCD a name and literally making a character out of it, which is what Over You does. Which also reminds me of another incredible Australian artist, Genesis Owusu, who did that a lot on The Other Black Dog.
Oh, cool.
He was on the podcast a little while back for that record.
Sick. He's fantastic.
Oh, he's amazing. But he created a persona out of his depression, which was the black dog, and he sings songs from the perspective of that. And I thought that was such a cool concept. So seeing someone do that with OCD was really, really cool. So I'd love to talk more about that one.
Yeah, that song's funny. Because we were writing, John and I were like writing in the studio one day in a session, and we were building up on these guitar parts based off an idea that John and Nate had from a separate session. And it was getting quite angular and robotic, but also kind of like sexual, which feels like a very odd way to describe music. But it was sort of like when it got down to writing lyrics, it was almost this idea of like dominant and submissive. And if you take that and you apply it to the theme of having OCD, it does almost feel like that condition can be dominant over your life, and you do just submit to every intrusive thought, every idea of yourself. And it was really, like I said, it was a fun way to approach it, writing out the lyrics and just kind of showing that relationship that you can have with your diagnosis or with your condition.
Yeah. I remember actually, this is just hitting me now, but like when on that Genesis record, when he was kind of personifying depression, it almost had this like temptress quality to it, because even though it's such a fearful and dark thing, it can sometimes have this like enticing allure to it. It's like it would be easier to ruminate than to actually sit with the unknown.
Absolutely.
So
yeah,
like come hang here instead of,
because it's comforting and it's almost your routine, it's what you're used to. And if you're used to it, then yeah, there is comfort within that, and you can avoid experiences that create tension or more uncertainty, even though you should be pursuing those to just your utmost ability, because that is what allows you to push forward and grow more as a person. You sort of just sink back into old habits and essentially just hang out with your condition all the time when you don't need to.
No, you stay trapped. That makes me think so much about like how much of a cyclical nature there is in this record. Like the thing that you said about like, you know, the first and the last track kind of touching on each other in a perfect cycle, you know, a lot about trying to break out of cycles, which is obviously a hard thing to do. And even though we've now obviously talked a lot about the OCD element of cycles, I think that it manifests in other ways on this record as well. Like talking about things like relationships or how you define home and where you typically find your comfort versus not. Like, for example, you've moved from Australia to the United States. Like, and that's a huge shift in what would normally be your comfort zone.
Absolutely.
And redefining that.
that's been quite a journey, because I've been wanting to move to the US, I think as early as when I was 23 or 24. I'm 28 now, so I always knew there was this desire to go overseas because it's where our audience is, and the US is just such a vast country. It really does, I guess from an outsider perspective, feel like where there is so much opportunity. It's where some of my favorite artists and writers and creators and just whatever are, and I really wanted to be amongst that and experience it, because whilst I do love Australia, it does feel, I mean, it is literally isolating because we're so far from everything. It's rare that international bands come to Australia, and because of that, I find that the ceiling for how far you can go, but also with creativity in Australia is quite limited. And I think I reached a point in my life last December where I went through a bunch of things personally, and it kind of created this catalyst. And I thought to myself and talked it over with my manager extensively and was like, okay, what do I have to do to get to the US? Because if I'm not going to do it now, I'm never going to do it. And I, from that point, essentially traveled with no real fixed address for about 7 to 8 months, just nonstop. Like, whether that was, you know, spending time in the US or then going back to the UK or then going back to Australia for a little bit and then back to the US. And then it's like you're on a tour and you're in Jakarta all of a sudden, and then you're back off to the UK and you're on tour, and then just nonstop. And whilst it was a very intense period of my life, I do owe so much to it because I just got to meet so many people along the way and have all of these beautiful experiences and become quite grateful for what I do, being a musician and being able to share my art with the world and having people connect with that. So it's funny to think about, because I do see myself as a bit of a homebody. I'm also a Taurus, so I love comforts. I love being comfortable. I love being hedonistic and indulging. But like, by traveling so much, I started becoming quite comfortable with that and being this kind of like temporary person. Just sort of, you know, I could just do whatever I wanted to and then pop off to the next city and then do it all over again and experience different cultures. That started to become really comfortable. So the actual idea of settling is more confronting to me now. And I think with all the traveling, but then also all the touring as well, like my lifestyle is so high intensity and then low intensity. And when it's high intensity, that's when I usually am on tour, I am traveling. And there is very loosely a routine, whether that's like, you know, sound checks always at like 3 or 5, and then doors will be at like 6 or 7, and then you know when loadout is and you know when the bus call is. It kind of does create this comfort and this sense of home, even though you don't have a physical home really. So I guess where I'm trying to go with all this is I've been really enjoying my time in LA, but like when I actually have some time in LA to be in my physical home, it almost does feel, like I said earlier, like confronting, because it's like, well, what do I do with myself? I'm in this vast city. I need to find my community. What do I do on my day to day if I'm not playing shows or I'm not traveling or doing this or that? It's like, it's this very bizarre, it's this really bizarre almost relationship with the city where I feel like if I don't push myself enough, then the city will just swallow me whole and then I'll go back to Australia. And then like, yeah, I feel like I could keep going forever, but just what's your take?
No, this is all good stuff.
it's just interesting because it's like, this idea of home is like a constant. I know it's a constant thing within my work, and I because it keeps changing for me, and I it's this very strange relationship I have with it.
Yeah, which is why it's quite interesting that this record is quite literally called No Place Like Home.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
But that can be a shifting thing. I think it is for all of us. When I was 17, my parents, or my dad got a job, or actually no, his job transferred him from Montreal, where I'm originally from in Canada, to just outside of Houston, Texas. And even though I had moved around a bit as a child, I was so settled in Montreal that was home for me. That was where my routine was. It's where the majority of my childhood was. And so when we moved, my sense of home was fragmented. You know, my parents were in one place, my birth city, my extended family that I'm very close with, my friends, my usual community were all back in Montreal, the culture that I was used to. And now a decade later, it's only in the last couple of years that I've started to feel that sense of home again and groundedness. So, and it took being okay with letting go of what home was and starting to shift and make a conscious effort. Even little things like decorating my house. I have a dog who's upstairs, and like creating a new sense of what it means to build a nest and to feel grounded. So yeah, it's okay that that's a shifting thing. I think that's a normal thing, especially in your 20s, in this part of our lives. It's normal.
It's definitely normal. It's interesting feeling this push and pull dynamic, because whilst Australia for me was home, and particularly my hometown, Newcastle, I knew that if I stayed there, it's like, yes, my family is there. Some of my best friends, people I've grown up with. My dog is back there. There's, you know, the community that I know and love, the landscape, all the beaches and the coffee, which I miss so much. But yeah. It's just like, even though it felt comfortable, there was always this sense of tension as well, because it's like, if I don't get out of my comfort zone sooner or later, like, this will just make me feel worse about myself. Like, I need to make myself feel uncomfortable, which I think as well, having a condition like OCD is, it almost sounds
counterintuitive.
Counterintuitive, thank you. That's what I was looking for. It almost sounds counterintuitive. It's important that you do put yourself in situations that are anxiety inducing or uncomfortable or have a lot of uncertainty, because by doing that, it's essentially exposure therapy, and you're slowly learning to become okay with those things and go, oh, that's not so bad. So
it is
such a shift to be here, but I know that no matter on some days if I do feel anxious or if I'm like, oh, I don't, like, you know, what am I doing here really? I know that I am grateful to be in a position where I can be here and slowly start to call it home and find those people and settle down and, like, find my roots and all of those wonderful positive attributes.
Exactly. I'm going to go sort of, I guess, in a sense, back in time, in that talking about realizing that you do need to make that shift. There's a couple songs on this record that maybe deal with having to let certain things go from home, if you will, for lack of a better word. Yeah. Songs like Midwest and Off Season, which kind of deal with, like, finding a person kind of at the wrong time or at a time that's in flux. And I don't know if this is something that you, like, agree with, but sometimes, like, there might be something that in a certain time in your life brings you a lot of joy, whether that be a connection or anything really. But sometimes you have to let go of that thing for kind of the bigger picture of your own self or your own fulfillment or your own bigger picture joy. And that's hard. I mean, like, I feel like these songs really grapple with that idea.
So that's interesting too, because I feel like Midwest is very direct in that sense, and that it does deal with a relationship and you know that it's falling apart, but you're trying to desperately hold on to it for as long as possible. And it's kind of funny too, because I went through this situation twice last year, which is insane to think about that it was all last year, but starting to see someone and it's going quite well, or you think it's going well, there seems to be something there. But then by the time that you get back home from tour, because you're a musician, you have to tour, it's your full-time job, and you've been keeping that connection the entire time, as soon as you get back home, it just dissipates. It's just like, oh, it's not you, it's me. Which, on reflection, is so fine. That's how it played out, and I'm okay with that, because it's led to all these wonderful opportunities. But it's just like, it just kind of kept happening, and I was like, this just feels like my life is a comedy, and it makes me, like, feel like I am not capable of being loved or receiving love because of being a musician, because it's like, this is my work, this is what I do. It just kept happening, and I was like, well, I can't really do anything about this. Like, I just feel like I have to keep trying and just hope for the best and almost laugh at it.
Yeah.
And try and see what I can learn from those experiences, rather than trying to build up this sense of resentment and this idea that, oh, well, I'll never be in a relationship again. Ugh, like, anything like that. Like,
yeah.
Because I wanted to make... I essentially wanted to write a breakup song, because I never really have, because I always felt a bit iffy about writing love songs. But I wanted to make it, like, the most positive, like, upbeat, feel good, but just tragic as much as possible love song. And I think
that's the Beach Boys formula. That's just what you got to do.
Yeah, but... No, I'm happy with how that turned out. That has some of my favorite lyrics on it. And examples of lyrics as well that are quite direct and very niche. Like the whole idea of being, which actually happened as well. I remember we had a day off in Colorado and I had this hour, like, just went for forever and ever, like, long phone call to someone I was seeing back home. And it felt like there was this real spark. And then just that idea of coming back home and you're faced with this very physical, real, there's a person right in front of you. Like, it sounds crazy, right? But it's just like, oh, this is what we actually are. And then it just ends.
Yep.
No other way to really put it. It just stops right then and there. And it's like, so yeah, I have enjoyed talking to other musicians about that too, and other people within the entertainment industry, of like, because I used to really, the idea of a long-term relationship just seems so impossible, but I'm now coming to terms with the fact that almost everyone I know does it, and it's actually quite normal. And I think, again, in the same way of having to connect with or wanting to connect with other musicians and how they write, and then make me realize, oh, like, I actually do really like songwriting. Like, having all those conversations and hearing how other people have navigated that made me realize, like, oh, like, I do want to be in a relationship. And if it has to be long distance, then that's okay. I know I can work through it. And if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. So.
Exactly. It's good to be able to find that peace, which, again, with OCD can sometimes be hard, too, because it adds its own little spice to everything. Oh, God,
it adds so much spice in a relationship. Particularly when it crosses in with other themes. Oh my god.
Don't even get me started.
What was the other song? Oh,
Off Season?
Yeah, Off Season. That song is more about not so much like romantic relationships, but more so friendships, like people I've met along the way. Because when I was traveling so much, there were so many instances where I'm like meeting someone for the first time or we're hanging out and just getting to connect with people and then realizing like, oh, I'm probably never going to see this person again. Or it might be years till I see them later because they're on the other side of the world in this city. And it's like just almost like an ode to that sort of time in my life where it's like you're having these wonderful experiences and you have, you know, potentially these could be lifelong friends, but you just don't know that because you can't really have it. You can't. Like, you're not going to be in that city with them. You're going to keep traveling. You're going to keep moving wherever that may be. It's like, I guess it's me like ruminating over it and almost grieving, but at the same time celebrating.
Yeah.
That I was at least able to have those experiences with those people.
Yeah. And I think those two things can coexist. You can be sad that maybe you and that person can't be like close immediate friends, but again there's like a beauty in the experience and you might see each other again. Like there's life kind of presents itself in funny ways. The last thing I want to ask about is there's a line that repeats itself across two songs and I'm curious to know why that is. That line is, if it takes two, can we call it a truce? And that is on both quote Close Quarters and Over You. I think. Really? I think it's on both.
Is it really on both?
I'm pretty sure it's on both.
I remember one of my band members was like, hey, you say this line twice in both songs, but it was actually a completely different line. And I think he wanted me to change it. And I was like, I don't think it really matters. Like, there's nothing wrong with repetition. Also, the idea of having OCD, I'm like, that's kind of the point. Like,
that's why I liked
it. The reinterpretation of it. And it's now funny that there's actually multiple lines that repeat throughout the album. I just think it's really funny.
Yeah, that made me laugh. But I like when people do that on purpose, too. It's like a kind of little narrative.
It's unintentional. Thing. And then when it's brought to my attention, I'm like, oh, that's really neat. Like,
I love it.
Yeah.
Like, the reason I brought it up was exactly for that reason. It's like it kind of creates these, again, these ties between songs. And it's like they're kind of nodding back at each other.
Mm.
But yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. No Place Like Home is available now wherever you normally get your music. This podcast is hosted, edited, and produced by myself, Sophia Lopercaro, and the artwork is by Meg Wilford.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.